Welcome, listeners, to week three of our final five episodes here at Feel and Film. I'm Patch, one of your co-hosts, and with me, ready to break ice and bricks in order to fight to survive, is my best friend and co-host, Aaron.
I don't know if I'm surviving. In fact, I'm not surviving. I'm going to die. And it would not even require Chong Li to be the one to kill me, because pretty much any one of these dudes, one punch, one kick.
Yeah.
It's over for me.
I'm absolutely with you. So, okay. Question. Non-fighter person, who would you be in the Kumite? Like, would you be a spectator? Would you be one of the judges? Would you be the guy on the mat who is judging the fights? Would you be the guy who has to wipe up the blood? You know, who would you be?
I want to say I would be Victor Lin, because he's maybe my favorite supporting character in this movie.
Okay. I like it.
I would actually be the guy at the very end, prior to the final match, when Frank is about to get, like, he's not shown up. And so they're going to call off the match. And he runs up and he puts money in the referee's pocket, because he's like,
reporter?
I got money on this guy and I need you to hold off until and make sure this match goes down. I'm that guy.
Okay. And he sounds so he sounds so pathetic. He's like, no, why? No, wait, no. Don't. And then he takes the money away when Duke shows up. Okay, I like that. Yeah. I like Lin too, man. That guy's great. I mean, like, put up your dukes, right? He's so great. Like, he would be my tour guide in going through this whole city. But I think I would be the guy on the mat. Like, I know that that's dangerous, but it kind of feels like it's the way I could experience a little bit of that excitement in the ring without being one of the guys getting punched in the face. And also, I mean, come on, Frank Dukes is like making sure when he's blind, he's making sure I'm not getting hit. He moves me out of the way. And so, good stuff.
You're lucky. Yeah. If it's Frank Dukes, you're lucky.
If it's Frank Dukes, yeah.
But come on now. I mean, you've got news. The reason we're talking about this movie, maybe hold your own for a second or two.
Yeah, I'm in the process of registering my hands as deadly weapon. So, listeners, the reason we chose this movie in particular is it's because it's a martial arts movie, and we could pick many. We've done some on the show already, but this one, I think, is a special one for me, because one of Jean-Claude Van Damme's, it's his first, and it's really what got me into Jean-Claude Van Damme as an action star and the martial arts scene. But as of a couple of weeks ago, I'm officially a black belt in Taekwondo. I'm happy to say I got the belt this past week. It feels really good. It's a little bit thicker and a little bit more, you know, more rugged than the other belts. And as my instructor would say, now it's time to train. Like, now you're a serious student. Like, that's how he describes getting your black belt means you're now a serious student, which he's kind of right, because now you have harder tasks to get your little stripes, tips, whatever they're called, to depending on what martial art you're in. But yeah, I'm pretty excited and I'm proud and ready to move on to the next journey as a black belt. I now get to judge during testings. I also get to be a sacrificial lamb if somebody needs a sparring partner during testing. Hopefully I hold my own. I'm trying to get to that point next to be able to do that. But yeah, I am a black belt. Wah!
Congratulations. I am proud of you. It's been a crazy journey, shocked me when you just embarked on it for the first time. And you've just stuck with it for, what, 2 years maybe now? It feels
three in July.
It's impressive, and it's an incredible accomplishment. And I'm a little let down, because I was really hoping you would have it tied around your head, like bandana style, you know, for this episode, you know, channel a little bit of that energy.
No, it's around my leg, like Chun-Li. And I'm going to like point to it every once in a while and be like, it's so good. All right. Well, this is your official spoiler warning as we're getting into this age-old movie that I don't know if it's streaming anywhere. I think I had to have you connect to my streaming service to watch it. But yeah, it's great. And it's got its problems. We don't care. This is one of those like great rewatchables for me. I was excited. I was telling Aaron as we were preparing for this, I was like, this is one of those movies, I think like the last two, that I can literally gin up notes for without having watched the movie yet. So it was nice to be able to be like, I want to talk about these things. And then we're watching the movie, I'm like, yes, gonna keep that. So that's how familiar it is for me. So Aaron, thanks for indulging me. Let's get into it. This is the quintessential martial arts movie. I'm gonna just say it right now. And I think because it has three things. It's got over the top characters, even though one is loosely based on a real person, which I kind of think is stupid. But It's got fantastic fight scenes. The choreography is just phenomenal. And it's basically pre-Mortal Kombat and an inspiration for MMA. So with that kind of formula, I mean, why would this not be a great martial arts movie, you know? So what are your thoughts, man? Did you agree?
I think it is a lot of fun. And I understand why someone like you and someone who grew up a fan of, say, Jean-Claude Van Damme or Steven Seagal or, you know, any of those guys would really gravitate towards this movie. I actually, without realizing it had a tie-in and inspiration for this, when I was watching it, I sent you a text right away and I was like, dude, this feels like Mortal Kombat. Like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
I don't understand why it's so similar. Well, come to find out, it is so similar because it actually did get inspired, or it inspired Mortal Kombat, correct? Is that how it
worked? Yes. It was, yeah, Mortal Kombat as a property, obviously, as a video game title. And then ultimately MMA as a sport inspired by the real life thing that was the Kumite. So we're not going to get into a history lesson. I don't want to talk about the biopic aspect of it. This doesn't feel like a biopic, and I'm okay with that. Like when you get the little card at the end that says, you know, Frank Dude set all these records and he was 56-0. And I don't believe that. And the internet is slew with like a lot of stuff debunking that. But that doesn't take away my enjoyment of the movie because I never felt like it was a life describing Frank Dukes. It was just this great movie about the Kumite. That was the star, was the tournament itself. And that, to me, is what inspired the Mortal Kombat video games. I think, in fact, Johnny Cage, his character was modeled after Jean-Claude Van Damme, not after Frank Dukes, the person, but after the character of Frank Dukes.
Because Jean-Claude was a movie star, which is right. What Johnny Cage was. Yep. Yeah, that was the other comparison that I felt like. Well, I mean, and Chong Li, to me, feels very much like Liu Kang.
Chun-Li. Or Liu Kang,
a villain or something in this. It's very much like Mortal Kombat minus the magic. It's a bunch of people who come together for a secret tournament to determine a winner, and it's brutal, right? And people die or suffer major catastrophic injuries. I do not love this movie. I did not enjoy it from a film watcher, like a story standpoint. For me, is not really doing anything. Mm-hmm. I also like the setting. I think I get way more out of like just the idea of the tournament and the Kumite. And it's a classic movie. Bill Simmons says this all the time on the Rewatchables podcast for The Ringer that we both listen to. He talks about what is a rewatchable. Well, the idea of it is back in the day when you were flipping through cable channels, which we don't do really anymore. But if you were doing that and this movie came on, you would leave it there and you would wait because you were waiting for whenever the next Kumite scene was, right? Because that part of the movie is rewatchable and is so engaging and fun. And it's just, it's hype. It's like me, I'm being into World War. I'm into WWE wrestling again for the first time in 2 decades. And it's very similar. It's just the over-the-top nature of the actual spectacle of the fight itself is great. Right.
Yeah.
The story that surrounds this movie is bad. A lot of it. And the whole, I got stuff to say about the tie-in. We'll talk about that later. But I do just love the idea of the secret tournament and this foreigner coming in and being specifically rejected because he is a foreigner, but yet he was trained by his master who has made him an honorary member of his clan. And, you know, I love the, I guess, I don't know, prestige of that.
Yeah.
The honor that comes with that he's fighting with.
I mean, it's very metaphysical. It feels a lot like you have this mythology that I think gets created with this tournament. Like, I think from what Frank Duke says and what others have confirmed, the Kumite that he was referring to took place in Nassau. So there's nothing really glamorous about that. That's more paradise than anything else. In fact, it's probably more akin to Mortal Kombat 2, you know, being on an island somewhere, even Enter the Dragon to an extent, which kind of has some Mortal Kombat flavors to it as well, also has some tie-ins to this movie. In fact, Bolo, who plays Chun-Li, at one point, the line that I didn't pick up until years later after watching Enter the Dragon, when Frank does the Dim Mak, what the hell's a Dim Mak, you know, or Dim Mak, how it's supposed to be pronounced, when he breaks the brick, Chun-Li says, bricks don't hit back. Like, that's a direct callback to Enter the Dragon, where Bruce Lee says, boards don't hit back. You know, it's so cool, this self-awareness, because he's in that movie too, and he plays basically the same character that he does here in Bloodsport. But I love the setting, not only for the tournament. I love how it looks. I love that it's an arena. I love that it feels like Pit Fighter, that old, I think it was an old Neo Geo game that was using like the real people before Mortal Kombat started doing that. But I also love the setting. So you're in China, but the whole thing takes place in this city called Kowloon City. And I wanted to stop briefly and talk just a minute about that. This city is fascinating because it was a real city walled within a city in China. So it's like you have this city, and then when Lin is talking about you're about to cross over an invisible border, and that, you know, when you go into this place, you know, watch your nuts. It's because this walled city was legitimately like a giant ghetto, and it like was meant to be a small development, but because of the poverty, because of the economic struggle that the people were living there, it just started building up on itself and became this giant city that had autonomy with, you know, just by itself. It was just its own thing. It has since been torn down, and it's been replaced with a giant park that is sort of a tribute to it. So if you go online, if you look up Kowloon City, there are these great sort of overlay shots of what it looked like, and also, you know, what it is now. But there are remnants of it. Like, there's a gate that's still there, but it's kind of like what we see One World Trade Center. You know, where when the World Trade Center went down, the thing that's been built up in its place is sort of a tribute to that. So it's such a cool, like, mystical thing, but it exists in real life. Like, it's not a fake place. And I thought, what a cool way to incorporate something that's this unique and part of China's history and make it the basis for this, like, gritty, dirty tournament. It makes perfect sense. In a tournament that has three rules, essentially, this is the perfect spot. It's not supposed to be in a hotel or an arena or something like that. It's in a basement, essentially, with, like, platforms and plastic and wood, you know, being able to show, like, if you set a record for fastest knockout or whatever. And I thought that was such a great added touch that elevates the mythology of this story to a place where I, like, would love to see a remake. I'd love to see an updated version. The problem is Mortal Kombat exists, and so we sort of got that. So I feel it would sort of reverse itself in terms of the inspiration, where people would be like, this is so Mortal Kombat, you know, only without the mysticism. And I'm like, yep, you're not wrong. So I don't know that it would work, which is, I think, why it sticks out to me as a fun movie to rewatch, minus the part that you mentioned, because I think that it feels very, like, rugged and raw and just right in your face with the fighting and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's, you know, it's got a police presence that is sort of aware of this underground mafia run-esque tournament that they accept taking place, but only within the confines of certain rules. I like that about it, that there is a level of, there's a layer that they don't want to go beyond, right? They want to keep it honorable to an extent. And that shows up toward the end when Chong kills the guy intentionally, basically, and everybody isn't celebrating with him. And they don't really turn their back on him directly, but they turn their back to, like, pay respects to this fallen competitor. And so it shows that while it maybe from the first glance, when you walk into that tournament with our characters and with Frank, it feels much more barbaric in the way it's presented to us. But by the end, you realize, like, it's really not meant to be that way. It's meant to be more controlled, like MMA or UFC.
Yeah.
But that scene actually brought up something for me. And I was like, wow, I wonder, what would people do if somebody died in the ring in UFC, like, on the spot? You know, before realizing that someone is dead, those are the exact things that we jump out of our seat and cheer about and get excited about. Because, like, dude's knocked out on the ground from an amazing... I mean, there was one happened a couple of weeks ago. A guy took a knee to the face, and I literally have no idea how he's alive. It's an insane knee directly to the, like, chin and the way his head snaps back. And we, as a fans and as people in the Kumite audience that are betting on this and watching it, you get excited and you're cheering and you're like, yeah, go, awesome, knockout. But, like, there could be somebody dead. And it's just a weird, interesting kind of dynamic that most other sports don't have you ever have to reckon with.
Yeah, and I look at that, at something like the Kumite, where you have this sense of not really expectation, but acceptance. Because when the guy died and the referee's like, yep, he's dead, and he looks up at the judges or the whoever they are, everybody gets quiet and they stand up, and everybody but Chun-Li's like paying their respects, but nobody's like, oh my gosh. It's almost like there's a level of acceptance that you have for this particular event that I don't think would fly if you're watching a boxing match or an MMA fight, because we assume that there are constraints put on the fighters that you can't do this, you can't do that. But look, MMA specifically is one of those sports that I have a hard time getting behind, even though I can appreciate boxing because the control aspect seems to be thrown out the window. But even with, like, WWE, people have gotten killed. And I remember specifically there was this insane cage match between, I think, Undertaker and Mankind that has gone down in history as, like, one of the best fights. But it's only because those two guys survived. But, dude, Undertaker threw the guy off. Threw the guy off the cage, this 15-foot-tall cage, onto a table. There's no way that he gets up from that, but he does. And it's the spectacle of, like, this super heroic act that the fans get behind. But I wonder, just like you, what would happen if he didn't get up? What would happen? Would people be getting sued? Would Vince McMahon be going to jail? I mean, I don't know. But Bloodsport as an event, or the Kumite as an event, seems to have that layer thrown out because the people in the audience seem to already expect that this is going to happen. There's a likely, more equally as much of a likelihood that someone's going to get killed as much as someone's going to win the actual title. And I don't know, I can't really reconcile that as a human being, but I kind of love it as a fan because it puts it in a place of exclusivity that means not everybody's going to get an invite to this thing. Only the best of the best from the East, from the West. And it kind of makes me ask one of these kind of questions I have, which is, how do so many people get into this thing as spectators? Like, if it's so exclusive, like, does your dad know people? They're not selling tickets to this thing. Reporters, gamblers, you know, whatever. I mean, I know some of it's, like, skeezy underground stuff. So my assumption is that the people running this thing are giving out, like, secret passes. They know what's going on. But man, I mean, there's a lot of people at this event for something that's so secret. It just makes me laugh to see that.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong. There are definitely a lot of people that are able to get, I mean, they have to. It's a betting event, right? It's
right.
Funded by that. And I'm sure that there is some sort of a financial purse that goes to the winner. They're not just fighting for strictly prestige. And
you get a cool sword out of the deal. I think that's enough, right?
Yeah. Does everybody get a new sword every year? Is there every time? Or I guess it's not even every year. What is it? Every 5 years
every
or something?
Three or four. I think every 5 years.
But, like, Chong Li is a defending champion, right? If I remember.
Yes, he is. What they said. He's got a sword. He doesn't need one.
So he has one, right? So, like, why would we give him another one?
It's a better one, man. It's a little bit.
But Frank has a sword too. Like, he, right? I mean,
he does
now.
Didn't
Tanaka give him his sword when he finishes his 2-day
montage
of training that felt like, yes, it took like a month, but was really 2 days? Or yeah, I think it was 2 days. I was laughing when that happened. They're training for this long time montage. It's like all these different scenes. Of course, great 80s music in the background. So I'm thinking about you and how great it is. And then somebody, he's about to leave and they're like, you know, I hope you've enjoyed this last 36 hours or something. And I'm just like, whoa, bro, you went like from 0 to 100 real quick.
let's talk a little bit about the montages, and we'll lead into kind of the what doesn't work here. I love a good montage when it makes sense. I thought that the opening is fantastic to get to know all these different players. You got Chun-Li cracking some ice with his elbows. You got sumo wrestler guy laughing as he's like throwing people around. It's so cool to get all the different folks, and we get introduced to Jackson, which I think is one of the more hilarious characters in the. He's a great foil for Frank, because he's like, hey Frank, hey, he's got no style. He's just a brawler, and he's completely like idiotic, which makes the end really kind of stupid, because he's like, anywhere, anytime, any place, if you need me, I'll be there. And I'm like, did you give him a phone number? Because I'm pretty sure, you know, he's going to jail or something from his military thing. So I don't know where you're going. But I love that. I also like the different fight scenes, you know, all the fights that take place during the Kumite. Again, everything leading up to the moment that he gets to China, like we could have started the movie with him leaving his dying sensei and going to China and meeting up with Lin. To me, that's great. Like, you could probably trim about 20 to 30 minutes off of this movie and it's happy. I skip that. I skip the whole bit with him and the girl, because nothing really comes of that except that she's just a pretty face to show on screen. Got to have a love interest, and you got to show him without a shirt on, which you see that anyway because he fights. And then the whole bit with the military, like that. Those are elements of this movie that just do not work for the story of Frank Dukes. Like, there's no reason for us to know that he's being chased by his military. He was going on furlough. He's going on like sabbatical, whatever it was. He had TDY scheduled. What did he do wrong? Like, he's just not going to his commanding officer's office to get new orders. There's no reason for him to have done that. And then the whole bit with him as a kid, God, the guy was awful. The kid was awful. What kind of a deal? You know, it's just, those are the quotables that I laugh about, because I quote those with friends of mine who've seen this and love the movie. It's just a bad section of him getting beat up by his friend's, or his dad's friend, or whatever, or his mentor, whatever he became, his sensei's. And I kind of want those things to go away. So fast forwarding through that, it's good. But I know exactly which parts to fast forward through, because all I want to see is the Kumite.
Yeah. So as best I could understand, like, he, regardless of what he had scheduled to do, he goes AWOL. He is ordered to appear somewhere and be somewhere. He is ordered multiple times to go back, and he refuses and is hunted down by Army Criminal Investigative Service, who are wielding the most unruly, gigantic tasers I've ever seen in my life. They have zero authority to them whatsoever. He just basically says, no, I'm not coming. And until the end, when they attempt to work with the police to like capture him, and eventually he basically still says, no, I'm not coming. I'll meet you at the plane. And they're like, okay, cool. So it's again, it's hard for me. I actually was thinking about this compared to Major League last week. I was like, man, did every 80s movie almost have like one subplot that just doesn't need to be in it, that it overdramatizes things? Because that's what it feels like. Now, the figure he's based on, yes, he was in the military supposedly, although I got a whole issue with like some stolen valor issues and stuff about this guy that just did not sit well with me. But supposedly he was in the military, and that's when he had participated in this thing. But you ramp it up the dramatics by making him AWOL, but it goes nowhere. There's no actual cost to it for the character. It doesn't really disrupt him in any way. It just is a mild annoyance for two scenes. And then there's no consequence in the end, which doesn't make any sense. It makes it completely unrealistic for him. And so that bugs me. What I actually would have liked to see is, if he was leaving on his military leave, not to go to the Kumite, but to go home to see his old mentor, Tanaka, and to mourn the loss of his friend, Shingo, I believe his name was, right? What was his name? Singo. Maybe it's Singo
Tanaka.
Or Shingo.
It's Tanaka.
The child version of Tanaka.
Okay,
And then we get the flashback, which, terrible acting aside, I understand. We're setting the stage for why he knows this family, how he got involved, mm-hmm. how he learned martial arts in the first place.
Yeah.
That's cool. I fully expected him to be going to the Kumite for revenge. And I know that's a played out storyline now, but it just made perfect sense the way everything was setting up. They even have a line at the beginning of the Kumite when Chong Li is either being introduced or someone is telling him about Chong Li when I think it's Victor, when he's like telling him about the different contestants. Mm-hmm. And he says something like, you know, he killed a guy, you know, in the ring last year or on the mat last year. And I immediately wrote down a note and I was like, oh, that's going to be Shingo. Like, that's going to be what happened is like he, you know, but like, imagine if that's what he's going back to revenge, right? Is like he and this kid grew up doing martial arts together and the son of Tanaka had entered this tournament and was killed by this guy when he didn't have to kill him. And now he is going back not to kill the guy in revenge, like a typical revenge movie, but to essentially earn the honor back for the family and you know, get some retribution for Singo, who died in this same tournament. I don't know. There was something about that that I kept in my head. I was like, that's what he's doing. And the movie felt better to me when I thought he had a purpose instead of just going to just prove that he could win it, because it felt selfish to me. And I'm that guy who can't get past it. If you put the plot in front of me that he is leaving the military AWOL to go do this thing and running away from everybody, like, I have a problem with ducking one responsibility you've taken on to go do a thing that you want to achieve that is your dream. I believe in achieving your dream within the confines of the other promises you have made and holding to them. And so I struggle 100%. With characters like that a little bit, even though 100%. The fights themselves are hype, you know, like awesome.
100%. I don't want to get to the fights, but 100% agree with you. Get rid of the military thing. Because again, you start the movie with him visiting his sensei and we get the flashback and we see how he came to be a part of this family. And he wants to honor his sensei's legacy. I get behind that. I think that's kind of a cool thing. The reason you like that plot that you just mentioned is because it happened in a movie called Mortal Kombat, where Liu Kang's brother was killed by Shang Tsung, and he's going to...
Maybe that's why I was like subconsciously...
I mean, that's pretty much it. So, I mean, it's not invalid. It's just already been done or was done later. So it's a good plot device. That's the thing that I get frustrated with, because those military guys become fodder for... two chase scenes where it's just hilarity. In fact, I sent you a YouTube link of one of my favorite videos, and it's essentially a Mentos commercial using that scene that sets up perfectly like it should be a Mentos commercial. Like at the very end when Frank is like giving the salute, like, hey, I got you guys, and after they've just fallen in the river, it's a Mentos commercial. And it's the hilarity of this movie that I think I want to believe that Paul Verhoeven sort of embodied himself into this movie, because there's so much like ridiculousness in how these guys emote, like between Chun-Li and between Frank, you know, and the slow motion. Like, I really wanted Paul Verhoeven to be a part of this, because it's just spectacle in a lot of these fight scenes. And I think the entertainment value of being like fist pump is what keeps people in their seats. What keeps a guy like me in my seat, because I want to see, oh man, that's cool. And when you have this diversity of martial artists that come in, and I say martial artists loosely, because obviously Jackson is not a martial artist. He's just a brawler. I think it's funny to see him amidst all these. But I love the care that was taken with really what I would say probably about a dozen different art styles, Muay Thai, Taekwondo, other kinds of martial arts. They're on full display here. And you see how these like match up. That gets us into like the Mortal Kombat and the Street Fighter 2s, like whose special move is going to outmaneuver someone else. And that's what I think watching some of these fights take place, because you're like, before you see the outcome, you're like, ooh, this guy that bounces around like a monkey, yeah, he's got no shot. But then he takes down one of the guys because of the fact that he can be so agile, and then he uses his strength like a monkey. But then, of course, he goes up against the samurai or the sumo guy and just gets squeezed to death like a pimple. So I love those parts, because it shows you that variety and it's entertaining to watch. Did you have any highlights of like any particular fight that you thought was like, wow?
I love the terrible, obviously telegraphed fight with Jackson and Chong Li, where Frank specifically tells him, go for the gut. He's weak there and stay away from his right leg. Doesn't listen because he's Jackson. And he knocks him down and draws blood, but then does the very typical thing of like dancing around the mat, celebrating too early and too long.
Yeah.
And then gets just annihilated, right? And then I thought he was dead at first because I hadn't seen this in decades. And the way that Chong uses his bandana as a taunt, I just love that. The other stuff, I think my favorite maybe moment in the movie is Frank and Paco trading kicks.
Oh, yeah.
There's like a whole sequence where they just smash each other left and right, yes. Left and right, left and right. And then I think that, yeah, I think it does a good job of just showing different, like you said, different styles. You have the big, almost sumo-like type character who's just this giant of a man, like almost like an Andre Giant more than a sumo.
Yeah.
And then you have like this very lanky, bouncy guy who reminds me of one of those characters. I forgot his name, but the character in Street Fighter. There's a character that's like
this. Dawson.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yoga
yeah.
Flame. Yeah.
That's who it yeah. feels like. And he's like, yeah. he like, you know, you see how he would have to use agility and kind of trickiness to try and compete against this guy, because if he gets caught one time, you know, he's going to get power bombed or something and it's going to be over. And that's exactly what happens. So I liked that a lot. And I, you know, for me, the ending is too silly. I think that it goes a little too far into the literal translation of what Tanaka teaches Frank at the beginning when he says, practice until you can meditate so that nothing distracts you, until you see and feel nothing but your own energy. It translates that into a literal you can't see, mm-hmm. which I don't buy like at all that would happen that way, but it looks cool. I mean, that's the thing. It's a rewatchable. I'm going to watch it every time. Like I'm not moving from the seat, but from a, you know, if I look at it and try to evaluate it on a realistic thing, I'm like, nah, Chong Li is going to kick your butt. He cheated. He's still going to kick your butt.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And I think that, again, the mythology of that, when you take it too far, can create a sense of hokiness that, again, it can be larger than life. And I don't think the director and the creative team were unaware of some of the ridiculousness that they were doing. They really wanted this to feel big. Like one of the scenes that's memorable for me, for multiple reasons, but at first, the scene where Chun-Li is fighting, I think it's Paradis, played by a guy named Michael Kesey, and it's where he kicks him in the leg and his bone comes out. It's like, oh my gosh, that's gross, right? I remember that scene because of that, but I also remember it because Michael Kesey goes on to become Tong Po in the Kickboxer series. So Michael Kesey and Jean-Claude Van Damme are like best friends. They grew up, they did martial arts together. And so they did all these movies together. And I didn't realize it because I think the first movie, I may have said this wrong, but the first movie I saw Jean-Claude in was Kickboxer. And then I watched Bloodsport after, but Kickboxer came like a year later. So watching Michael Kesey without his Tong Po makeup, because he looks very weird in his makeup, but it's very distinct. It's so weird to see him like out of character, out of Tong Po character, and watching him do his thing. But I love their fight. It's really good because it at that point, I never thought Chun-Li was going to lose any of the fights besides the ones with Frank. But I think Paradis gave him a run for his money because he knew how to fight. And I think his fighting style was more aggressive, like more fluid than some others. There were a couple of guys that were very much like high flyers, almost like luchador-like, because they would just like kick high and they fast and all that stuff. So it's just really, really cool to see that. But yeah, I think his stands out for my money as like the, oh, you know, that's, you don't want to see that. And of course, what's his, Frank's girlfriend, the reporter, that's her first day into the bowels of the Kumite. So she gets to see somebody's bone sticking out of his knee. So report on that, girl.
She's a pointless character to me, too. I just don't get a lot out of her addition. You don't go hard enough into the romance to where it truly becomes something I care about. And you don't go deep enough into her as a journalist. It's like both are kept kind of minimalistic for the character because it's a very quick, brief movie. And because that's not the point of the movie, and he's only there for a handful of days anyway, so it would be really difficult to generate all of that in those 2 days when he's actually concentrated on fighting and running away from the army, police, and all these other things. And so, you know, in theory, if he was there for a month, you know, doing this tournament or something and not running from the army, and you could transfer those scenes and spend more time on their relationship and it being something that grows and builds over the course of this experience, and it being something where it genuinely, there's a push and a pull between the fact that she's reporting on it, but she thinks, as she says, what does she say? She says something about how it's just people bashing each other's brains out. Like, she kind of makes fun of it at one point.
Well, she's saying that because she's frustrated that Frank continues to go back.
Right. Well, that's what I was saying. If you make that more of a deal where then he is actually torn between doing the, you know, staying safe for this girl he has fallen in love with and stuff versus doing the thing that he came here to do and accomplish, but it doesn't go that deep. So yeah, she's kind of, she's fine. Whatever.
And to go back to your earlier point, the plot device of the revenge plot device is very prevalent in Kickboxer, like the way you described it. And it happens early on. So you get that movie, while not as, in my opinion, as exciting with the choreography and the fighting, it has a more clean plot. Like, I get behind Jean-Claude's character because of the fact that, spoiler alert, you know, his brother is a kickboxing champion, goes to Thailand and takes on Tong Po early in the movie and gets paralyzed. And so his motive for the rest of the movie is unabashedly revenge. And he goes to train with this guy named Zian, and they're training out in the woods, and he becomes this great, you know, Muay Thai fighter and ends up battling Tong Po at the end. That's a cleaner plot. And it's one that I think has, even its subplots are a little bit more believable than the ones in here. They don't feel thrown in. They don't feel like they're trying to expand the duration. Because again, this feels like it could be a really long, like, not Lifetime movie, but it could exist in an hour and 10 minutes. But they're like, we got to get to the 90-minute mark, guys, in order for this to be a feature. What can we throw in? Well, let's bring in the AWOL story, or let's bring in the love story. The love story I can buy because it's very much common in a lot of these. But I'm the same way. I'm like, why get distracted? Because he is so focused on this that you don't have time. I would rather we get her as full-on reporter, and she's not into him. Like, they're comrades. They have a common goal. Like, she wants to expose the illegality of this, where he's like trying to gain the honor. Like, that would be a cool kind of new plot for Bloodsport. You've got this Kumite that's been corrupted after all these years, and he wants to go in and restore it to its rightful honor because it is honorable what he's doing. And she's like, I want to expose the mafia side of this thing. That would be really, really neat. They meet early, and as they're going through this, there's no military at all in this. And then maybe at the end, they walk away and he's like, I love you, you know, whatever. But then they find happiness, and then Jackson's the best man at their wedding, and, you know, whatever. It's just one of those things that I think has bones, but it just gets outshone by the thing that I think they spent the most time on, which is appropriate. So, yeah. Could have done without that. I did, however, I love her introduction with I think it's Hassan, where he flips the coin. He switches the coin. Thought that was great.
Yeah.
He goes, "You'll lose, American asshole." these accents and these lines are just incredibly hilarious.
That's how the 80s was, man. Everything had to be 2:11.
Yeah. And it's yeah. So definitely not something that would fly today, but but definitely memorable when it comes
for
to that.
For the record, so. My favorite part of that final moment between Frank and Ray, you mentioned the anytime, any place you need me, I'll be there. But the what he says before that, when he first goes in the room, he says, next time you fight, try to keep your clothes on, and hands him his bandana back. And I just, I love that. And I love how even after the corny, anytime, any place you need me, I'll be there, he says, I love you, my friend. And he says, me too. And I genuinely, like, I would have liked more of that relationship built up, but that scene gets me. Like, that scene works for me and gets me, it appeals to that emotional brotherhood in me as a man, where I'm just like, I like these two guys together.
Yeah. And I think that some of that between him and Jackson, it works because there's enough of those pockets of scenes where you get their camaraderie. You get that sense of, hey, we're both Americans doing this. And I love how they're introduced. Like, Jackson's playing Karate Champ arcade.
That's before that. They're introduced when he sees him harassing a woman on the bus. But yeah, when they're
grinning.
Playing,
he's just grinning.
The line at the arcade is outstanding.
Where he says, aren't you a little young for full contact? Full contact. And he goes, aren't you a little old for video games?
It's great. Such a perfect comeback. And then they both kind of look at each other like, yeah, you got me, you know?
Yeah. So it's great. And then they sort of bond over Lynn, and where he's like, he goes, like, put up your dukes, right? then I think, I'd like to believe, this isn't any kind of trivia that I've read, but I'd love to believe that when they get introduced, when they first go into the Kumite and they're walking through the alleys and stuff, and they meet that guy and he goes, okay, USA. When Jackson basically mocks him, he goes, okay, USA. I feel like the actor did that like spontaneously. I don't think that was a written line, because that's something I would do as a juvenile, like a teenager. I would do that because I would find it hilarious. And it's just, I think what Jackson does for me is he provides this childlike optimism or vantage point to what he's doing. Like, he feels invincible, even though the guy's like 60, 80 pounds overweight, drinking beer, and uses just his brute strength, which is why it makes sense when Frank says, go, keep doing it. He's like, yeah. And he eventually gets taken down. I, like you, when I first saw this, I was like, oh, did he get killed? Because that would have been something interesting. And I think that would have been interesting if that were swapped for when Chun-Li killed the other guy, where they would, I kind of wonder, would they all stand up and pay homage to Jackson? Because one, he's an American, and two, he's kind of just not the ideal candidate for a martial arts fighter. But that would have been an interesting angle too, because that revenge story then would have taken kind of precedence. Like, and that would have been conflicting. Like, who am I doing this for? Am I doing this for my sensei? Am I doing it for myself? All these types of things that you could do, and it just would create some interesting tension there. So I would like to see that maybe in a remake that'll never happen. All right. Well, that's all I've got. Anything you want to add before we wrap up this conversation?
No. I mean, it was fun to get a chance. I don't think I would have watched this on my own for no reason other than without having a specific reason to do so. So I'm glad I got to revisit it and understand why some people talk about it occasionally. It's not my favorite. It won't be my favorite. There are other martial arts movies that I will gravitate toward over this. But yeah, I think it's still solid, and it's still kind of a foundational 80s martial arts movie along with some of the other ones you mentioned.
I
think it's worth checking out at least once for anybody who's ever seen it.
Yep, for sure. For sure, with those caveats. All right. Well, that wraps up episode 3 of this 5-episode adventure as we land the plane of Phelan Film. Next week, or next time we hit the mic, we're actually going to be doing a double feature of the National Treasure movies. So, great heist movie. Yet another genre that we love is heist movies. We were actually, just a little inside baseball, we were toying with our, before we decided to wrap up Phelan Film as a whole, our 400th episode was going to be a trilogy of some of our favorite heist movies. So it's a little bittersweet that we don't get to cover them, but we'll definitely probably rewatch them or watch them if we haven't seen them. I'm pointing to myself because there were at least one or two of those that I hadn't seen. I'm not going to tell you which ones. But yeah, so be on the lookout for that conversation happening here in the next couple of weeks. Aaron, thanks for this one, and we'll talk soon.